Matt Report, episode 43 with Eric Hamm, creator of Catalyst Framework and founder of Cobalt Apps.
So, you know, I went to bed this morning at 5:30, and then my toddlers woke up at 6:15. So I'm running off of 45 minutes of sleep, and I took a 2.5 mile run this morning. I'm rocking some serious exhaustion, but
awesome. It's going to make for a better interview.
Welcome to the Matt Report, the number one WordPress business podcast. This isn't geek speak. It's about the journey of success and failure as a WordPress entrepreneur. Get ready. You're just an episode away from your next aha experience or big idea. And now your host, Matt.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Matt Report, the number one WordPress business podcast on the web. If you're looking to build and succeed in your WordPress business, this is the right place for you. Episode 43. If you haven't heard of me or heard this episode, where the heck have you been? Thousands of people come from around the world to listen to my guests and their journey about running their WordPress business, hoping that they can learn a little bit from them and, hey, how some people built million-dollar WordPress businesses and how some people are making a few hundred bucks a month in extra cash. So stick around. Definitely check out MattReport.com, MattReport.com/subscribe to join that mailing list. Be sure to grab these emails when I send out new episodes. So look, something a little bit different this week. My MacBook fried and it's getting repaired, and potentially I have lost the last 5 Matt Reports that I didn't get a chance to back up. Shame on me. We're going to fix that moving forward. So this is audio only, first time ever. Let me know what you think of the format. Do you like audio only? Do you prefer it? Do you ever go to YouTube and check out the videos? Do you watch me on MattReport.com? And how important is it to you to see our beautiful faces talking to you about WordPress? Today's guest, Eric Hamm of Catalyst Framework. Awesome, awesome guest. Definitely an awesome story to tell. You're going to enjoy this. Loads of things to learn. I hope you brought a pen and paper with you. So without further ado, here we go. All right, everybody, welcome to the program. I am joined by Eric Hamm, founder of Catalyst Themes and Cobalt Apps. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You've just done a complete 180 on the business last night.
Yeah, there
so,
you go.
So as you were saying earlier, you have been on about zero sleep and launching a whole new venture, if you will, with Cobalt Apps and the Catalyst theme. Before we dive into that, who are you? What do you do? Give people the 2-minute elevator pitch of Eric Hamm.
Sure. I started working in WordPress back in 2008. I kind of got into blogging and stuff like that, and then I quickly realized that that wasn't gonna make me any money, at least the way I was doing it. So I moved on to WordPress web design, and that actually took off quickly. But I quickly realized that wasn't what I wanted to do. I didn't really like that kind of work, and then in the process, I developed a WordPress theme for myself, just for my work, so I didn't have to sift through a big folder of a bunch of themes. And I called it Frugal, and people really liked it and they wanted it, so I started giving it away, and people suggested I start selling it, and I did that, and that took off. And so I had the Frugal premium WordPress theme for a couple years, and that was my main business. And then that basically morphed into the Catalyst Framework, and then what we did last night. So that was kind of the skinny.
That's awesome. Now, this is a great story because I think a lot of the folks who are listening to this are in that same seat where they're thinking, I am diving into WordPress, I'm blogging, I'm trying to build a digital product, that kind of thing. What kind of PHP, HTML, CSS design background did you have before you said, you know what, this whole blog marketing thing is not ramping up fast enough, I'm going to develop a theme?
Yeah, absolutely none, actually. It's funny because before that, I had an on-site computer service business for about 6 years, and I always kind of wanted to be a geek. I was kind of like a wannabe geek. I'd try to learn C++ and stuff. Of course, I had no use for it. I wouldn't do anything with it, so it was kind of pointless. So I never really got into coding until I actually had a purpose behind it, and actual dollar signs that could motivate me. And I think what's so great about WordPress is that that it makes even things like coding actually quite accessible to the non-coder. Mm-hmm. Even our I've got the Catalyst theme, and of course our new products and stuff have we've got a CSS builder and a PHP builder tool that actually writes code for you based on options that you set up. And what's cool is that people have told me that they've actually used those tools to learn coding, and they've basically become pretty proficient in coding and everything. And then after that, I've seen people actually start developing their own plugins and selling them and everything like that. And these are totally people that were just total just bloggers, and kind of turned coders. So yeah.
What was that aha moment when you, back in 2008, when you said, you know, this internet marketing or blogging thing isn't working? What was it that you said, you know what, this theme, it's time to build a theme? Or what was that aha moment that made that click?
Well, the negative aha moment was like the 50 cents that I earned from Google AdWords or whatever. Well, one of the things that was really good was I connected with some people who were kind of up there in the blogosphere and really had good reach, and I was helping them with some stuff just with basic WordPress things, and they ended up kind of being helpful to me, kind of saying, hey, if you do web design, I'd be happy to put an ad up on my site or whatever. And once they did that, all of a sudden I had like more business than I knew what to do with. And that was kind of the aha moment that said, hey, I can actually make a living, a full-time living with WordPress. But it really wasn't until I had that aha moment with the theme development that I actually said, I realized I can actually make a living and enjoy it in WordPress, because I really did not enjoy the web design myself. I didn't like the kind of work where, the service work where it's like, if you're not working, you're not making money. Whereas with the, development of products and sales, you're working and making money, but they're not directly connected. So you have a lot more freedom and stuff like that.
It's funny that you bring that up, that you didn't enjoy it. And when I talk to a lot of folks who are just starting their either just business or WordPress business, I always say, don't, especially in the WordPress field, if you're not a designer, don't say you're a designer. If you're not a developer, don't say you're a developer. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean like, you stop being a poser or something like that. But I mean, it's so much better if you just said, hey, I'm a WordPress consultant and I use these tools to help you, get more sales or get more leads, that kind of thing. If you say you're not a designer, then use some really good themes that are already designed for you. But admit to it. Don't say that you're a designer and then wake up one day and say, man, I really suck at using Photoshop. This is this is driving me nuts. You shouldn't have said you were a designer in the first place. It would have been so much better for you and your client.
Right.
One of the other questions I always ask as well is, what do you do with a $500 client? And back in your service days, is that something that was kind of dragging you down where, you were designing sites and you just weren't getting paid enough for it?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I'd have situations where, I was certainly undercharging. And then of course, when you undercharge, the expectations actually go higher.
Exactly.
I'd find there to be situations where people would be nitpicking after I'd put way more work into something than I originally, said I would, and then they would even sometimes pull out and be like, oh, well, I'm not interested with this anymore, and all of a sudden I'd basically be sitting there with no paycheck and all that effort, and I realized absolutely I was kind of scraping for pennies, and it just it was quite frustrating.
Yeah, I believe it, and that's the thing that we hear most is the less you charge, the more they want.
Right.
When you started, reaching out to these other bloggers that were, more known in the blogosphere, were they giving you any kind of advice to say, hey, you should really kind of get out of the client services into digital products? Because I know that was really hot back in 2008, 2009, even into 2010, like white papers and digital books. I mean, did you kind of get that feeling from them, or did you know like, hey, I need to get into a digital product?
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely had my, little time period where I was, starting to do ebooks and stuff like that. I think for me, what kind of clicked for me was once I realized that the people that were making money in WordPress were the ones who were able to elevate themselves kind of above the masses. It doesn't even have to be, because they're like an absolute expert in a certain area, but just something that makes them unique. I realized with the, you know, the ebook thing, I was basically kind of a part of the herd at that point, and it wasn't even close to giving me any kind of a potential future. So I guess I didn't really get, you know, any specific advice from any of those kind of big time bloggers beyond them just basically just being helpful to me. Mm-hmm. And I guess that was one of the pieces of advice that I was thinking about is I think one of the biggest things you can do when you're kind of trying to connect with others in the WordPress community and kind of you know, connect with the right people and everything is just be as helpful as you possibly can to as many people as you possibly can, as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. And like selflessly, like expecting nothing in return, because people, the right people will notice that and they'll recognize that you're not just in it for your own, you know, just trying to kind of get people to do stuff for you. And that's kind of what helped me early on, was really helping a lot of people and just happened to help the right person. And they kind of turned around and helped me big time. And that kind of helped me transition from kind of, you know, making pennies with blogging to, you know, actually making a full-time living.
Do you have an example of that? Because that's actually something that's been on my mind lately with a lot of folks coming to the Matt Report saying, how do you even, what's my first step of getting involved in this awesome community that I hear so much about?
Yeah, well, you know, I always, you know, hesitate to get specific with names.
Sure.
But the person who helped me specifically get from point A to point B was actually Leo Babota. I always have trouble saying his name. Babota of Zen Habits. Super nice guy. I haven't touched in forever, but motivatethyself.com was a blog I had started for just, you know, basic motivational posts or whatever. We had kind of connected. I was, as far as the helping part, I was just, you know, I was just trying to help some of his community members, some of the people in his, you know, posting comments on his blog and stuff. I was helping them with some just basic WordPress stuff. And I guess because I had a, you know, similar topic in my blog, he used it as an opportunity to kind of help me out. And what he basically did was he at that time he went because he's constantly simplifying, right? Mm-hmm. You know, at the time he actually, you know, had a decent amount of banner ads and things like that on his site. And it was the first time that he decided to go ahead and go to a single banner ad on his site and then charge a specific amount for it. Mm-hmm. And so he said, hey, do you want to be the first person to do that? And he actually, he even helped me out with the initial payment of it. I mean, he's just really nice, really helpful, you know, helpful guy. And so I put that up and it was actually at the time it was this web design business. I called it Frugal Site Design because, you know, I used my Frugal theme for it. And anyway, I mean, my goodness, instantly I had tons of business. I didn't know what to do with. And that literally I went from doing my on-site computer service business that I was kind of trying to phase out and really making no other money to making like totally full-time income doing this. And within a month, I was completely a full-time WordPress web designer. So that was definitely the part that kind of got me, you know, from, I guess, point A to point B. But then, like I said, it transitioned from basically that ad turned from the frugal site design ad to a frugal theme ad when I shifted to theme development. So
I want to get into the theme stuff, especially because I'm sure people are chomping at the bit to get to that. But one quick question, did you have any branding issues by calling yourself having the term frugal with your web services?
Of course. It was a terrible
story about that.
Terrible name, man. Terrible name. I think part of it was that the domain name existed, and I was so happy. I was like, "I'll take it." Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it was interesting. It was actually a mixed bag because on the one hand, it was certainly people had this expectation of cheap or less money or whatever, so that wasn't a good thing. But actually, I think that was the one unique situation where it wasn't such a bad thing because on Zen Habits, frugal is a good thing. Even Leo for a time ran the frugal theme on Zen Habits, partly just because he liked the little frugal, you know, the Powered by Frugal link in the footer because that just really kind of embodied, you know, a lot of what he was about. So, like I said, very unique situation, but yeah, generally it would have been a bad name.
Awesome. So at what point did Frugal Theme realize that it needed to scale up, you know, after you switched from the client services to the theme?
Yeah, basically, I guess it was once I was giving away the free version, and I was doing this little sign-up form, and I was getting tons and tons of people downloading it, and but not really getting much out of it, and that was fine. But then somebody, you know, people started requesting features, and then finally somebody just straight up said, "Hey, just put a bunch of cool features in it, and then sell it and make a living off this, man. What are you doing? Why are you giving this away?" And you know, again, it was one of those situations where I just went ahead and, you know, spent a little bit of time, developed a premium version, started selling it. And, you know, it was having that instant huge community of Zen Habits that, you know, was able to kind of filter in through that one banner ad. I think that was, you know, that's honestly, that's one of the biggest hurdles that I think most people are going to run into with any kind of business, but especially something like in WordPress, is getting from that point where you're making, you know, pennies on the dollar with you know, banner ads or whatever, to actually making a full-time income. There's that leap that you have to make where you can actually be making enough money so you can spend all your time doing it. Right. And until you do that, you're working, you know, at 3 a.m. because, you know, or whatever. And like I said, I think I had kind of a unique situation where I had that kind of connection that gave me that instant access to a lot of people that were really interested in the products and stuff like that. So,
and your other unique situation is, you're not inherently a WordPress developer or designer. How were you managing that? Were you outsourcing? Did you have somebody that you were paying on the side? How did that work?
I honestly just kind of learned on the fly. I mean, that, I think, just to give you an idea. So, you know, we'll get to it, but basically, you know, I shifted from, Frugal to Catalyst, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons, other than the fact that we wanted to change the name, was the fact that I kind of learned on Frugal, and though I, you know, it was kind of a crash course and I learned quickly. So, you know, a lot of it was pretty solid. There was enough of the foundation that was not as solid as it could have been because I kind of learned on it. And so that was one of the reasons for completely going with a fresh start, because once we did Catalyst, I had, you know, a couple years of development experience by then. And I actually had, you know, a lot, you know, was able to create a lot more solid foundation for the framework. So
nice. How long did Frugal live as a theme, as a premium theme?
I guess it was, you know, close to 2 years, okay. About 2 years or so.
And then at what point did you say, okay, Frugal, time to become Catalyst?
Well, I think we started actually working on Catalyst, and we didn't even know what it was called, but we started working on a refresh probably a little over a year after Frugal was out, just because we kind of knew that we were going to do that. And so we spent probably a good 9 months on Catalyst before we made the announcement that we were going to, you know, make the change and everything. So, yeah, I guess it was about 2 years after that that we went ahead and made the announcement.
So 9 months of kind of what I'll say stealth development. I mean, you weren't really telling anybody about it. But were you leveraging some of the feedback from Frugal to develop into the new what will be now known as Catalyst, what we now know as Catalyst? Were you just building off of features that you said, hey, I think the audience wants this, or are you just building off of direct feedback from feature requests?
Well, definitely a lot of feedback. You know, I think some of the best feedback was when we got some of the options like half right in Frugal. So, you know, you get the praises and complaints about the same feature, and you're able to put those together and say, based on the negatives and the positives, I can make the perfect, you know, version of this particular option. We had so many features and options in there that we were able to get a lot of that feedback that way. Honestly, I just remembered specifically, because it was kind of fuzzy, but I just remembered exactly what it was. The reason we started developing early, it wasn't necessarily that we were like, you know, 9 months before we were like, we're going to phase out Catalyst or Frugal and we're going to do this. It was we actually were starting to work on some other projects. We were working on these plugins that we were going to do for like affiliate marketers and stuff like that. And in the process of doing those, one of them was a flop just because we overthought it. One of them went actually did pretty well. It was called Impact Page Builder plugin that we did, and we ended up selling it eventually. But it did pretty well. But both of those taught us a whole lot about everything that Frugal wasn't and could be type thing. And then from there, shortly before we made the announcement, we basically took all the things we learned there, and then we developed Catalyst.
Can you say what one? Do you have one outstanding reason why that first plugin flopped? Because a lot of folks are maybe struggling with that same thing, where they're overthinking, you know, all these features and enhancements that they want to put into their product, but maybe they just don't need it.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's tough. I was just thinking about this before the before we started talking, because some of the questions I was thinking about. You know, it's funny because the product itself, the idea behind it, even now when I think about it, it was actually kind of ingenious the way it was set up. But it was like you said, it was too overthought. It was one of those things where I think probably the best rule of thumb is if you can't explain the concept of the product to, you know, the average Joe in maybe 60 seconds or less, then you're done with it. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
And because it was one of those things where, you know, we'd be talking to people about it, and it would take several conversations till they would get it. When they finally get it, and they'd be like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And yet you could just tell in that look in their eye that they're like, yeah, and I'd never use it though. Because, you know, yeah, so... Yeah, overthought.
And then you sold out the other plugin that was really successful. Can you touch upon that real quick, just so folks can understand like what that process is like? Did you find a buyer? Did a buyer find you? How did that pan out?
Yeah, well, actually, I was working with another developer at that point, and he had done a lot of work with that plugin, and then he eventually started his own company, and when he went in that direction, I went ahead and gave him the plugin as you know, I don't know, not necessarily a severance, but you know, just as kind of a you know, a separation, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you know, I basically gave that over to him, and then shortly thereafter, he I think he found you know, some websites where he could just kind of post you know, WordPress products for sale, and somebody connected with him and bought
gotcha.
It.
Gotcha. Yeah. I recently interviewed Trent Lipinski of CyberChimps,
The
responsive theme, and he talked about how he acquired the CyberChimps theme, which was an interesting story. So it's always nice to kind of find that even within the WordPress ecosystem that we're seeing, like, you know, it's almost like a Silicon Valley kind of thing. Like, hey, you got this great product. I'm going to buy you out, or I'm going to acquire you, or I'm
right.
going to acquihire you. It's kind of interesting to see these little things, even though they're at a very small scale, that they're actually happening.
Well, and like you, we were talking about earlier, it's just, you know, recognizing that, you know, WordPress is relevant, right? You know,
correct.
It's that these little products are actually businesses, you mm-hmm. know, so for sure.
So along those lines, perfect segue. Thank you, Eric. Are you comfortable sharing what kind of numbers you were seeing with Frugal, and then what that looked like to say, you know what, is that the motivator to say we need to rebrand and turn this into Catalyst?
Yeah. Well, I mean, essentially, before I mention any numbers, I was going to say, basically, this is just some random info, but number one, January through, I don't know, June is by far the most sales that we would ever get with any theme that we have. We always find that any WordPress product, January through June, and especially like February, March, April, May. That's for whatever reason, that's when people like to buy. I guess summer, people are on vacation, and then you have people go back to school, and then you have like Thanksgiving and Christmas. I guess all that stuff kind of distracts people, but I would say, you know, maybe 70% of sales, or maybe 60, at least 60 to 70% of the sales are in that first 5 to 6 months.
Wow, anyway. that's an interesting stat.
Random information. With Frugal, again, what I found was interesting was early on I had a lot of help from people like Leo, even Darren Rouse and John Chow mm-hmm. helped me out a few times, just kind of, you know, helping me promote it and stuff. And that was, so I would almost call that unnatural, income or traffic or whatever, and unnatural in the sense that you take it away and you're left with very little. Right. And so it's not like, you know, a natural progression. It was more of a, you know, so it's kind of, it was great and it helped me give that boost. But it also was something that if I didn't find my legs quickly, once it started to kind of get pulled away, I would just crumble and you know, it would basically show that my business was not built on my, you know, my own stuff. It was built on somebody else's help. So I was able to find my legs and kind of build a foundation. But what happened was when that assistance kind of faded, sales did drop. But thankfully, you know, I had enough of a foundation that I could continue. And then I just worked on building it back up. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think I've always been kind of a one man show. Sure. It's been more recently that I've, you know, kind of connected with a few people for support and marketing and things like that. But generally, you know, for the most part, you know, one man development team and you know, things like that. And but you know, I would say with Frugal, you know, sales anywhere from say $15,000 to $20,000 a month, and then it kind of dropped a little bit, and then I built it back up, and then it started to fade again. And I guess we can get into that at some point. I was going to kind of explain some of the mistakes that we made with the products and some of the things we've learned about it. But ultimately, then we shifted to Catalyst. And Catalyst was probably the first time that it was very clear that the product was really selling itself, because it was much more solid and people were kind of more confident in it. And then, you know, I would say, you know, at this point, you know, we're or give or take around, you know, about $25,000 a month in sales or whatever. And it's up and down. I mean, some months are much stronger, and then some months are, like I said, you know, especially during the holidays and stuff, it can go down. But, you know, I would say every year is a slow but steady rise. And, of course, you know, we're always looking for ways to go ahead and kind of hit that tipping point and actually break through to get into those, you know, $40,000, $50,000 a month type stuff. So
nice. So I like to try to bring the Matt Report listeners on a little bit of a roller coaster ride. So Frugal at its peak was hitting that 15 to 20K mark. You leased your first of three Porsches at that point, and then take us down that path of, you know, you say that all of a sudden there were some things that came in where revenue dropped, and obviously one of them is you kind of had that that faucet, if you will, of the promoters online, and as soon as that faucet went off, maybe your revenue dipped. Anything right. else that kind of that impacted the revenue that folks should be aware of?
To mention the kind of mistakes that we made, when we were doing, you know, we're doing Frugal, and then we were kind of saying, you know, hey, if we can make this amount of money with this product, and we could kind of maybe get it to kind of like put it on autopilot, then we can build, you know, other products that are, you know, similar or whatever, mm-hmm. and, you know, and then they'll make the money. And we kind of thought, like, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. And what we didn't realize was I would say probably the tip, you know, that I would probably suggest, you mentioned to your listeners is when it comes to developing products, you either do one really well, or you do multiples that all have their own unique purpose, and that they all work well together. You mm-hmm. know, it's kind of like the whole yin and yang, like, you know, the black and white, they fit perfectly together. It's the idea that, like, you know, I was going to mention, Copyblogger Media does this beautifully. Mm-hmm. They've got their framework, they've got their web hosting, mm-hmm. they've got multiple plugins that do very specific things. And when you see them together on, like, Copyblogger's website, on their banners and everything, you see this, like, you know, you see this kind of synergy in it, you know, but you see this, like, you know, synergy of products that all fit perfectly together, and each one serves its own purpose. We made the mistake of basically saying, oh, okay, we've got this one. All right, autopilot, boom, set it on the back burner. Now we're going to do this one, and then we're going to do this one. And they didn't interconnect. They didn't serve their own unique purpose. They actually kind of stepped on each other's toes sometimes. And once we kind of set one on the back burner, that one would just naturally start to go down. So when we started making more money with the one, well, the other one was naturally making less money. So we were finding that we were basically developing and supporting two products and making about the same amount of money that we were when we were just focusing on one. So
were these like competing themes or competing plugins?
Well, it was like the Impact Page Builder plugin, the one that Velocity that flopped. They ate up a lot of our time, and then in the Impact Page Builder plugin, you could use it, you know, used it with themes, and it, so it wasn't like, I mean, there a lot of people actually used Frugal and Impact and stuff like that, but it wasn't like a perfect marriage at all. And yeah. Like I said, more than anything, it was the fact that for the most part, you really can't put something on autopilot. There is no such thing as autopilot. It's a treadmill. You're either going forward or backwards, but you're definitely not staying in one position. And so I guess that's kind of what we found. And so it's one of those things where if you are going to do multiple products, you've got to make sure that you can continue to nurture every single one of those products and help it move forward. Otherwise, like I said, you're going to end up like we were doing twice the work and making, you know, the same amount of money.
I'm so glad you hit that point about autopilot, because I think a lot of the listeners, when they first heard that, they were like, what? I can set this whole thing to autopilot and I can do, you know, tens of thousands a month in revenue. But I'd also imagine, going back to the competing products, that just to set an example for folks, like the Impact Page Builder could work with, let's say, a StudioPress theme. So now you might be supporting, hey, I'm using Impact Page Builder on StudioPress. Why isn't it working with StudioPress? And then you have to kind of support that at a certain level.
Right.
So now it wasn't a complimentary product. Like somebody was buying Impact for a bundled version with Catalyst or Frugal at the time to kind of complement each other. They could have been used in a competing scenario.
Right, exactly. And actually, I'll mention that, yeah, I mean, the difference between WordPress, I will say there still is the whole making money while you sleep thing. It's just not as easy as you think. But yeah, I would say the difference between doing services and doing, you know, products is, you know, services, I always use the analogy, services, it's like running, and products is like riding a bike. You know, when you're running, if you stop running, you stop moving. Whereas when you're riding a bike, you build up momentum and you can stop pedaling and you'll keep going, but eventually you'll slow down. So it's the idea that what I love about products is that I can, you know, when I want to, or when I, you know, can, I can really, you know, pedal super fast, build up that momentum, but then it gives me that freedom to kind of maybe coast a little bit if I need to, and not suddenly, you know, income is just not coming in. Mm. So that's the kind of freedom I love with the products. But I think the big, you know, miss, you know, the false assumption is that you can just basically build up the momentum and then just stop pedaling and go party. You know, obviously that's not, you know.
Yeah, it's actually I like that analogy. That's really good. Let's talk about Catalyst and launching that. Any lesson learned from, well, now you're on your fourth kind of rebrand. Was there any kind of lesson learned from going from Frugal to Catalyst in terms of a brand and carrying customers over to that brand?
I would say, number one, you know, it was key to make sure that you showed your community that you were absolutely 100% there for them to help with the transition, that this wasn't something you said, you know, okay, so what we're doing now, you know, take it or leave it. See ya. You know, we were totally supportive. If anything, it gave us the opportunity to go above and beyond with, you know, helping them out and everything. And it kind of showed them that we did care about them as a community, and that we did appreciate them and everything like that. We also made sure we had certain tools in place for kind of the transition. I'm actually working on something like that right now for the transition from Catalyst to Dynamic Website Builder for Genesis. But basically some, you know, simple plugins that transfer settings and kind of help convert sites and stuff like that over. So it's kind of like you got to mesh the technical stuff with the personal touch or whatever.
Mm-hmm. How long did Dynamic last?
I mean Catalyst?
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Catalyst.
We launched Catalyst in 2010, but it was December, so is it 11, 12, you know, so it's been like 2.5 years, over 2.5 years. Back the summer of last year, I had kind of thought about this, wanted to do it. The dynamic child theme, which comes with Catalyst, has lots of no coding options, etc., and people just really, really love that. It's kind of like one of the big parts of Catalyst that people love. And so I've always wanted to kind of port that over to another framework just to see how it would work. And of course, Genesis was always kind of like my second favorite framework. I just, you know, I had to be my second favorite.
Did you ever admit that during the years?
Oh, yeah. No, I always admit it was my second favorite for sure.
Yeah.
as long as it wasn't my first. But yeah, so I ported it over, and I basically ported all of Catalyst over, even the non-dynamic options and stuff like that, and basically took Catalyst, ported it over into a child theme for Genesis, and called it, you know, Dynamic for Genesis at the time or whatever. And it actually went quite well. It was almost an experiment that naturally turned into a semi-successful product that we weren't really trying to make successful, you know. Mm-hmm. It just kind of, people really liked it. And so that was cool. And of course, a lot of our community and Catalyst were like, oh, you know, you're going to move over to Genesis. And I honestly, until about a month ago, never really crossed my mind. I was like, no. But anyway, so that went well. And then the Genesis Extender plugin, which is an interesting kind of example of a second product that actually does work, even though it doesn't work at all with the first product. Mm-hmm. And that is because it basically takes much of the dynamic for Genesis options and turns it into a plugin that then works with Genesis child themes other than dynamic. So in other words, it can't work with dynamic because, of course, it's basically the same thing in terms of some of the options. But the reason it actually works as a kind of co-product is because it's a natural progression for somebody to some of the times use dynamic, but other times want to use one of the pre-customized child themes that Genesis puts out. And in that sense, they can kind of just pull over their, you know, features into the plugin and then use it for that child theme. So that was an example of a kind of a co-product that really worked well. So we came out with that a few months later. Another thing that was really beneficial with that, and I guess is another kind of tip, is the fact that because those options and features are almost identical to the ones found in Dynamic, at least as far as some of them, it's not like developing two products. It's like developing one product that you just have to sync with each other, you know. And so that it makes the work, you know, you're barely working anymore for the two products, as opposed to having two completely different things. So but anyway, so we developed those, and then I guess about a month ago, Genesis 2.0 has been in beta for a while, and I've been playing with that and, you know, updating my Genesis products for that. And, you know, really excited about some of the HTML5 stuff that they were doing and everything. And so were some of the people in my community, because a lot of them use Genesis as well, and you know, as well as Catalyst. And they were asking, hey, you know, I love these new features in Genesis. When are you going to add them to Catalyst? And so I was, you know, I had been planning on kind of doing some research and eventually pushing stuff like that in there. And as I started to put some of that effort into it, I realized that in the process, I was actually setting aside some of the projects with Dynamic that I was going to start focusing on. And I knew that that was the stuff that my community really wanted me to work on. Mm-hmm. And so I started, you know, working on the Catalyst stuff. And then I realized, I'm like, wait a second, I'm about to reinvent the wheel here, doing something that's already been done. And I've already got a product that's already working on that thing that's already done it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, why am I spending my time doing this? And it was one of those things where it was like, it took 2 seconds to make sense, and it took about a week and sleepless nights to make the decision. But it was one of those things where once it hit me, I realized, you know, I've got to make this move, because I'm going to be able to do so much more with the parts of my products that people love, and let the Genesis developers focus on the core foundation. And it was just kind of a common sense, it just made total sense. And
what were the things that you were like, hey, why am I are there a few set of features that you were like, why should I reinvent this? Genesis already has this.
Well, like schema.org, gotcha. they've got you know, the implementation into the markup, the HTML markup and everything like that. I know Matt Cutts, once Genesis 2.0 has started doing some more stuff with that, you know, that kind of more advanced SEO and HTML5, Matt Cutts of Google changed over his blog to Genesis, and you know, just more people were giving that kind of stuff attention. And so, like I said, you know, anytime those things, like with responsive design, when that came out a couple years ago, you know, or started becoming big, I guess, not come out, but you know, once stuff starts becoming big, you know, you get it, you give it attention, and then you start saying, okay, well, how can I implement this into my my own products, because people are gonna, you know, really want that. And so I started looking into that with Catalyst and all, you know, some of the stuff that they were doing with Genesis. So that specifically was one of the things that I was basically thinking here. To be honest, and just to mention this too, I personally, to me, the framework part, the you know, the framing of the markup and all that stuff, to me, that's like that's like, you know, I don't know, sweeping the floors and, you know, cleaning out the toilets or something like that. To me, that is the grind work.
Right,
I like to do the UI stuff. I like to do I like to make you know, useful tools that are, you know, that build code for people. I like to do things like, you know, make it so people can add content to any place on their website. I like that kind of like more creative type stuff. I hate to say more creative as if it's less creative to do the framework, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
right.
There's a certain type of product development that I'm doing with that versus the other. And again, it was kind of like, hey, I can not only spend less time, you know, on this stuff, but I can actually spend all my time on the parts that I really enjoy most, and honestly, the parts that I'm best at, and I think the parts that people appreciate the most.
Yeah, and that's almost like that age-old question that lives within WordPress. Like, some hardcore developer might be using WordPress for the first time, and they're like, "Well, I'm going to build a contact form."
Right.
You know, I'm going to build a contact form because I know how to do it and I'm going to do it.
Yep.
You know, and then they're like, you know, 3 months later, they're like, oh, there's this thing called Gravity Forms or Ninja Forms or Contact Form 7. Like, that would have saved me forever. And why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Besides that kind of feeling to move strictly to Genesis and StudioPress, were there any kind of, you know, did you look at any kind of business numbers, financials? Like, did you kind of weigh these balances before you made that move?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly did. It wasn't really the defining point for me. I mean, I guess the thoughts I had in my head to break it down were, number one, I knew that I was going to be dropping a product that made, you know, the highest percentage of sales or, you know, of revenue for my company instantly. I was going to drop that. And so I knew that I was going to have to make up for it quickly with these lesser priced products and everything and products that, you know, didn't have quite the amount of sales and everything. And yet I was pretty confident that that was going to be that was going to work out. And the reason being, not only does, I mean, basically we're talking numbers. So Catalyst, you know, has a community of 6,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Genesis has a community of about 90,000. So, you know, you do the math there and, you know, obviously they have all their child themes and stuff like that. So I'm kind of a smaller fish in a bigger pond, but it's a much bigger pond. And so I think, that will no doubt be helpful. The other thing though, and this was the big one, because I had a competing framework and yet I did have products for Genesis, I was never really able to fully connect with that kind of inner circle, you know, with StudioPress, because they kind of couldn't, you know, it was, you know, and I, you know, Brian Gardner mentioned it. It was kind of like, you know, Coca-Cola calling Pepsi and saying, "Hey, can you help me with something?" You know, it's like, no.
Yeah.
But the second I kind of, you know, was both feet in, it was instantly, you know, I was able to, you know, kind of enjoy the benefits of being a part of that community and yet still being a third party, which I like. I like the independence of having my own company and kind of being an outsider, but one that's fully invested in, you know, in the product, you know, the framework and everything.
What kind of feedback are you receiving from folks who are going to be put on the retired track, if you will?
Well, yeah, okay. So are we talking about feedback for the change or feedback for the new product?
Feedback for the change.
The change. Okay, well, that's been a mixed bag.
Yep.
Yeah, that's been fun. And actually, right now as we speak, I'm sure there's a combination of praise and slander going on right now. Because it's been crazy. I definitely feel a little beaten up and everything. But for the most part, it was totally, you know, a lot of that was expected. For the most part, though, it's actually been really positive and you know, it's just great to see those kind of core community members come out. And I mean, I've had people just straight up say, like, you know, everything says, you know, why are you doing this? But I totally trust you, and so I'm totally on board. You know, it's just kind of like that kind of stuff that's really cool. And you know, some of these people are even, you know, made comments like, hey, you know, I was really shaken up when you transitioned from Frugal to Catalyst, and then, you know, within a month, I was praising Catalyst and realized what a good move that was.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, I trust you or whatever. So that's the kind of thing. I mean, obviously building trust with your community, which of course involves following through with things that you say you're going to do and being honest and, you know, you live, you know, when you screw up, you say, hey, I screwed up and stuff like that. That's definitely critical, because when they'll be there for you when you're doing them what you want, what they want you to do. But the second you stop, if they're not really, you know, on board, they're just going to they're going to take off. So
I also like to dive into, and we can touch upon it real quick, the mental health of an entrepreneur. And it's great when people are, you know, looking at either financials or numbers, community size, downloads, sales, that kind of thing. But you're making a pretty good pivot. How do you feel? Do you feel like you're starting over again? Do you feel like it's that ramen noodles kind of day all over again, where it's like, okay, I'm pivoting my company in a whole other direction? Are you excited for this? Or are you just feeling certain, like, hey, this is a way to go?
Yeah. I, for the most part, I feel really confident. I definitely don't feel like the ramen noodles type scenario. I think there's, let's say the bike analogy. I feel like I build up enough momentum that I feel confident that I'll, you know, cruise through it, even if there is a little bit of a slowdown. But, you know, it's been pretty cool. I think one of the key things that, you know, I couldn't have foreseen, but the way it worked out was great, was because I had put out those Genesis products, you know, almost a year ago, I was able to get some Genesis people on board really quickly, and some, you know, some people that, you know, are kind of, you know, in the community and everything. And so I really instantly had a really warm welcome from people that have been already using my Genesis products for almost a year now, and that really helped kind of, you know, the transition go smoothly. And then, like I said, my community in general, for the most part, are really you know, still totally on board and just kind of being really supportive and everything. So I think for the most part, I'm, you know, excited, and I think it'll be just fine.
Awesome. I mean, it's been a tremendous story. Some tremendous takeaways for folks who are listening to this too. So, you know, props to you, and it's awesome to see you as a WordPress entrepreneur and just the crazy things that you've endured and that you've gone through, and definitely a mixed bag of emotions, and but on the other end of the rainbow, it's been successful. So congratulations on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks, man.
We're going to jump into one of the other last few segments of the interviews. It's called What's in Your Toolbox. What piece of software besides WordPress do you use on a daily basis? Some kind of app that maybe others don't know about that you need to run your business?
Yeah, Forklift, man. It's called Forklift 2, actually, I think is technically what it is. It's a app for a Mac app. And it basically is what I use instead of Finder. It's basically when I transitioned over from Windows to Apple, you know, right around when I started doing the WordPress stuff, one of the things that always killed me was I hated Finder. It I hated it.
Me too.
And, yeah. And what Forklift is amazing, man. It's so you can do two windows side by side, and then you can also do as many tabs as you want on each window. And you can literally it's like having two monitors. And so you could be scrolling through one set of files on one side and then one set on the other. And then you can shoot them back and forth and stuff like that. And then it also has really intuitive FTP built in. For example, instead of having FileZilla where you have to right click the file and say download and edit and all that stuff, you just double click it as if it's already on your computer and it just pops it open in your editor and stuff like that. So it's one of those things where, as a developer especially, who's always flipping through folders and files on my Mac, it's invaluable, man.
Awesome stuff. Let's jump into the lightning round and ask you a series of quick questions, and you'll have a series of quick answers.
All right.
The one plugin you cannot live without besides your own.
That's a tough one. I'm supposed to have a fast answer too. The one plugin that I can't live without, I honestly don't have an answer, because it really depends on the website. Akismet, I guess, or whatever that is. Yep. for keeping the spam out.
Yeah, absolutely. A favorite WordPress or business book?
I would maybe E-Myth Revisited.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. A quote that you live or run your business by?
Oh, the what is it? You can either, you know, feed a man a fish for a day or whatever. You can teach him to fish. I suck with quotes, but you get
it's,
what I'm saying.
It's the pressure of the lightning round.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, I just, with the community, we're always all about teaching them to fish instead of just giving them fish. So.
Yep. What's the best business or career advice you ever received?
Work on your business, not in your business.
Nice. What's the longest a client project has ever taken?
Maybe 3 months.
Oh, that's not bad. I think some folks are like 5 years.
Oh, gosh.
If you had to switch to another CMS, what would it be?
Drupal. I don't know. I that's such a fake answer, though. I don't know.
Who should I interview next?
Oh, that's a tough one. Jason Hobbs, he's a guy who helps with a lot of stuff with, on my team. He's got a lot of unique, business, experiences. So
sweet. What's the one question that I didn't ask you that I should have?
I have absolutely no idea. It's the lightning round, man. You killed me with the lightning round.
Awesome. What's next for the company?
Next thing is I'm going to be working on a pro version of Dynamic. So.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, Eric, it's been a tremendous, tremendous interview. I really appreciate the time that you took. I know we're a little over schedule, but it's been a great story, and I think people are going to take a lot from this interview. Where can folks find you on the web to say thanks?
Cobaltapps.com.
Awesome. Eric, have a great day. Everyone on the interweb, go find him. Say thanks for doing this podcast. MattReport.com to get subscribed to all the rest. Thanks, everybody. Hey, everybody. That's another awesome Matt Report episode recorded. Hope you found a lot of great information within that interview with Eric. Find me on MattReport.com, MattReport.com/subscribe. Follow me on Twitter, @MattReport. Hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you think of an all-audio version. This outro music is called Pain in Jeopardy by Just Plain Ant. See you next time.